The blather is about our first Mr. Main of the series, Mr. Tickle. I have an interview from Al of Monochrome Sheep Blogspot to tell us all about the journey from sheep to fleece. We have the Craft Fairy, the Scottish segment, and in that you are all invited to the first Keith and Craft Collective Burns Night Supper. I have the news and the hellos and tell you what I've been up to this week. And I'll let you have all the links in the show notes that come with the place that you download this from, so relax and get the links later. Now get your tea, your craft, and I'll tell you what crack is in Keithness this week.
Now for the blather.
The blather. Tickle. The first blather of the year is Tickle. Plus, it's the first Mr. Main of the series. I might manage them in order. No promising. He's the first, numero uno, and I give you Mr. Tickle. Here is my resident Mr. Main expert to tell you about Mr. Tickle. So, Sandy, you're an expert in Mr. Tickle. What does Mr. Tickle look like?
Well, Mummy, he has long arms, he likes to tickle people, and he has a blue hat, and he has a big smiley face.
And what colour is he?
Orange.
Thank you very much, my resident Mr. Main expert. I'll give you a background to the Mr. Main books. They were a series of 48 children's books by Roger Hargreaves. Started in 1971. And Little Miss is an accompanying series of 42 books by the same author with female characters that started in 1981. After Hargreaves' death in 1988, his son Adam Hargreaves began writing and illustrating new stories involving the Mr. Main and Little Miss characters, including the creation of 10 new characters, four of which were inspired by work that Roger Hargreaves had produced before his death. Now a very popular children's cartoon programme, which has funky music and is voiced by Simon Callow. They were created by Roger Hargreaves after his son Adam asked him what a tickle looked like. A round, orange figure with long, bendy arms, like Sandy told us. Mr. Tickle is a bit of a mischief maker. In his book, he's still in bed and he puts his enormously long arms downstairs to get a biscuit out of his kitchen cupboard and take it back up to him in bed without getting out of bed. I'd really love to do this. For lots of things. In the morning, I could put wood on the fire and turn it up to warm the house up before even getting out of bed properly. At night, I could tuck the bairns up at the same time and stand in the hall reading them the same book. Imagine cutting the grass. You could stand in one place the whole time. As for crafting, now how handy would it be if you needed the pair of scissors on the other side of the room, or the pattern is upstairs and you are downstairs, or you needed to pin out and block a great big quilt? That would be handy. And you could also knit with massive broomstick needles. Mr. Tickle appears in Mr. Grumpy's book later in the series, and he tickles him until he stops being so grumpy. This is quite a good talent also. I think that we should send Mr. Tickle around the world as an envoy of happiness and tickliness to the grumpy dictators and spread freedom to those who have not. The definition of tickle from Wikipedia. It's a verb. Tickling is the act of touching a part of the body as to cause involuntary twitching movements or laughter. And this is how I've managed to get the recording of both my children laughing for you in the podcast, as when I tickle them, they explode into giggles. And it's something that most parents do to their bairns at some point. Some are ticklier than others, but to make them laugh like that I think is brilliant. I often distract my two in the supermarket by tickling them as I go round the aisles, because it's better than screaming. Tickled pink is an expression that you could have for when you have something completely and utterly takes your fancy. For instance, I found a pattern through Twitter for a bunny clava, which is a toddler balaclava with bunny ears on it. This is a fantastic thing for toddlers who keep taking their hats off in the cold weather. I laughed when I saw the pattern photo, and it's been downloaded faster than Mr. Tickle can get his hands on downstairs for a biscuit. John Tickle was a contestant from Big Brother Series 4, and he now presents geeky television series Brainiac. Nothing wrong with geeks now, is there? A wombat knitter. The song this week is Orange Juice, Rip It Up and Start Again. It's quite tenuous, but it's because Mr. Tickle is orange. And Orange Juice, I believe, are a Scottish band, and Rip It Up, rip out your knitting. Rip it, rip it, rip it. Now, Mr. Tickle's enormously long arms have hands at the end of them, and they need mitts to keep them warm in the winter. I've done a bit of a nose about Ravelry, as I do, and I've found that our very own Spundun is doing 11 mitts for 2011. And there are a few groups on Ravelry doing 11 things for 2011, and it's quite a good motivational tool. I Make Mittens group. I might actually join this, maybe, as I've done some mittens already this year and I could actually do with a few more. I've asked Spundun about this and she says, "Thanks for your interest in my mittens and the mitten face going on at the moment. I decided to make them as gifts for family for Christmas 2011, and that's quite a few pairs if I include Man Pal's family as well. Eek, 15. Woohoo, 15, ouch. Fuck, you'll be fine. Do them all before June and then you'll be all smug. Just remember where you've put them. Now, there are lots of us taking part in 11 Mittens for 2011 in the I Make Mittens group, and it is getting off to a great start. She's a bit behind because she was away for Hogmanay, but she's catching up now. I did have a look in the group and there's over 5,000 group members. Wow. Plus, I've had a look at Spundun's Mitt on her project page. I think actually that's how I got to the I Make Mittens group. And they're fantastic, especially the Sankar and the Mountain Mitts. So keep up the good work, Spundun, and I bet your hands are lovely and toasty. Now, for those lovely mitts, you need some yarn, and that yarn can come from sheep. This leads me on, very tenuously and shoehorned in there, to our very own Mr. Man, who has the very same mischievous grin as Mr. Tickle. Pause for smile. Anyway, on the Ravelry group, it was suggested by the Sandrada that I find out about the fleece before it is shorn and turned over to us woolly enthusiasts. Also, it's tying in some of Needs Yarn's questions about the sheep breeds in the Highlands. So I've asked Sarah's hubby from the Craft Vimto group, Al, and he sometimes takes part. I asked him ages ago and we managed to get some time in to record an interview with those themes in mind. I've also recorded their son Oren, who is a listener sometimes. Hello Oren! You might remember that he had liked Daisy being on the podcast and he'd asked where Sandy was, so then Sandy was included as a request to him. And now he's got his own spot. And without further ado, here is the interview with Al. Okay, I've had a request from one of my podcast listeners, ALP Star, from Roseville, Minnesota, which is now twinned with West May, and she's asked if I could tell the sheep story before it gives us fleece for us to make pretty woolly things from it. Al, as you're a crofter that has sheep, could you help us with this? Firstly, tell us more about you and your croft.
Well, hello everyone, and Louise tells me there's thousands of you. Sorry, hundreds of thousands.
Maybe not quite that
okay,
much.
Fair enough.
Tell your
just thousands. Okay. So, well, I'm a full-time worker. Like most people on small farms, I work full-time. So keeping the croft is really a family affair. It's a 23-acre croft with a small two-bedroom house on it, which we now use as a holiday home, and a steading, which is two stone buildings that we use to bring the animals in when it's cold and do various jobs in and around it. And Louise wants to say something.
What's your address for your croft so that people can come and stay here?
True, it is lovely, yeah. And we always need help around lambing time, although no one seems to take us up on that. I don't understand why. Oh, well, it's Firthviewharvest, firthviewharvest.co.uk.
Perfect, cool. Wow. Come stay there, it's lovely. Been in it, it's nice. Is that you?
Yeah, 23 acres, small house with some stone buildings around that we use to bring the animals in, lambing, shearing, jobs like that and the like. Yeah, and of course we are right on the north coast of Scotland, and the land finishes at the north coast. So out of the top, and when we look north, we see the Orkneys.
It's true. It's a lovely piece of the world. What kind of sheep do you have, and why do you have them?
Well, we decided to keep sheep because we wanted to know where our meat came from, and we wanted to use the land instead of just letting it go to ruin or other people use it. We didn't like at the time not knowing anything about sheep at all. We didn't like the local breeds, which was Cheviot. So we chose something that we thought was good looking, which was the four-horn Jacob, which is black and white fleece, and obviously has got four horns.
Good looking. It looks like a devil.
Well, yes, it can look like a devil. It also gets accused of being a goat occasionally as well.
It's very photogenic.
Yeah, but that's why we decided that. And then recently we've got some Cheviots because we realised that there's a reason so many people have got them up here, and that's because they're hardy and they survive on the ground. And we know a little bit more now about what a sheep is supposed to be and they're supposed to look like. So,
all right,
yeah, cool. Cheviots and Jacobs.
What's the difference between the breed you have, or have you said that?
No, well, the Cheviot's a hill sheep. It's used to being up here, so it really does thrive on the ground we've got, and it's all white. And the Jacob, well, it's not a commercial sheep, so there aren't so many of them around, but it's famed for its meat. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to have quite a nice sweet-flavoured meat. But, of course, the wool is not commercially viable at all. So it's only useful for small-scale people who want to do interesting things with it, or for things like insulation and stuff like that.
A Jacob or a Cheviot?
Yeah, Jacob is not worth anything because it's black and white. So commercially, people want white wool so they can colour it. So Jacob wool is worth pence, and a decent white wool would be worth, say, £1, a kilo.
Oh, that's so true. But strange enough, you do see it a lot now that we're doing a lot more knitting and stuff and spinning, and you do see it a lot, and people want it, and they have it over in America as well, which I didn't know. I thought, Jacob, is that not like the oldest type of sheep?
No, there are lots of old sheep, but what would you say, fable or history says that it comes from the Middle East and has, you know, religious roots, but
devil sheep, told you.
I see. But I'm not convinced myself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Can you tell the story of the sheep from lamb to fleece to plate?
Yeah, well, lambing for us is, well, it's in this part of Scotland, lambing is usually around mid to late April. We tend to lamb in February or March because that fits in better with my work. You can lamb indoors or outdoors, but we lamb indoors. And then the sheep, we try to leave them to lamb themselves, and about 90% of sheep will lamb themselves. And the other 10%, you've got to get in and help them a little bit. We try not to do that. It's just about having confidence and patience just to watch it. And then your challenge is to keep them alive during what is left of the bad weather. The next job would be, obviously not for the lambs, but for all of the other sheep, would be shearing. And you want to do that, well, mid-May onwards. Mm-hmm. And what you're looking for, which some of your listeners and maybe even you, Louise, would know about, is the rise, which is where the wool...
No, no idea. Tell me all.
Well, in the winter, the fleece growth slows down. And then, of course, it speeds up again in the spring. Mm-hmm. So that forms a weakness called the rise in the fleece.
If
you try and shear a sheep before the rise, then it'll be more difficult. You'll still get the wool off, but a lot easier to shear sheep after the rise.
Right.
And of course, again, some people who like to play with wool will know about, I think it's called first and second cuts. An American friend of mine, we went on a lambing course together, and she kept a few sheep, and she particularly cut the wool for her and her spinning friends. And it was all about not going over a sheep twice, the second cut.
Oh.
Because then, and you maybe found it in some of the wool I gave you, you just find all of a sudden you've got a small little bit, which is really no use, and a little bit frustrating when you're trying to spin it. Yeah. So that's the first cut. So that's that's really the summer out the way when we've done that, and then it gets into the exciting time. But of course, you've got the lambs that were born in March, April, and if you're lucky, any time from 16 weeks onwards, they may be ready for the table. You're looking for them to be 42 to 50 kilos up here. Different parts of the country, different weights, but up here 42 to 50 kilos, so that once they're dead, because we do eat these things, they are about 20 kilos.
For those vegetarians, you don't really need to hear about this.
Well,
but it's reality. This is a farming croft, and this is what happens. It's the way of the world. So fast forward that bit.
It's nice to be able to use the wool, but the reality is that they're there because people want to eat it.
Yeah.
And I would think it's probably one of the best meats to have if you're in the kind of organic steaks and living outside steaks as well, because it seems to be that other animals tend to be bought in to be fattened up. We would either fatten them up ourselves, and by that just leave them on the grass and let them get to the right weight, and or we would sell them as what they call store lambs, which would be a little bit, maybe about 4 or 5 kilos lighter, and somebody else would buy them, take them to better ground, and they would fatten up on that better ground up to the right weight.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the two choices: sell them at store or keep them until they're fat and sell them direct to the abattoir.
Mm-hmm. Is this about what time?
The activity around here seems to be August, September, October time. Mm-hmm. We've still got some in the field because we weren't organised enough, so they've gone through the winter. But as long as you've sold them by February, March time, then they're still lambs.
How old are they when they're classed as a lamb?
Anything up to a year.
Right.
And generally ours would be about 9 months.
Right.
So I think a lot older than people would think. I don't know.
I always thought that a lamb, when you eat lamb from the shop, is like a little peaty white thing that bounds around the field, but obviously it isn't.
Yeah.
So that was quite interesting for me to find out.
Then they're hoggets, and then a little while later they'll be mutton. You can shear in the winter, And there's a couple of reasons for shearing in winter. One is that if you bring them in for lambing or keeping them indoors, you get a lot more in, just for the space. Also, it means that for people who show pedigree sheep, that if you shear them in the winter, they'll have a better coat at the time when you want to be showing and selling them. But you must pretty much keep them indoors once you've sheared them, because although after a few days the thickness of their skin doubles, so it's not too bad for them, it's clearly not, you don't want to be taking all of that wool which is there to keep them warm, and then stick them out in the field.
Do you show your sheep?
Well, I'm not brave enough to show them anywhere important, but we have a local village show, the Cannersby show.
I have mentioned this.
Yes, which we take a couple along to. And essentially, if there's nothing else in the class, then we win. But it's nice to take them along.
So is that the winter? Is that the whole year?
Well, around October, November time is kind of exciting time, because we're choosing the tups and we're essentially picking the lambing date, because ewes go pregnant or carry their lambs for 5 months less 5 days. Mm-hmm. Pretty accurate. So you're picking your day so you're already thinking about lambing. And then in about a month's time, so about the back end of January, we'll be getting the scanner, ultra scan. Guy will come round and he'll scan our ewes and see how many we've got. Mm-hmm. So that's an exciting time as well, because we talk about it in percentages, but we hope to be over 200%. So as an average, carrying more than twins.
Because
ewes are obviously two teats designed to have two lambs.
I never knew that either. Are they expensive?
Well, small scale farming, you're not going to make any money. It's somewhere to throw it, but it's good fun. Probably the price of lamb has gone up, so we get a better price for our animals. As I say, wool is worth nothing, but for me, it's nice to be able to get people like yourselves and others in the group to, you know, just say, here's a fleece and go away and use it, because it's worth nothing anyway. So that's nice for us.
Somewhere along the line, somebody's making the money, because I'm sure most of the listeners will know that when you buy the wool, it is can be quite expensive. But I think a lot of that's to do with the processing part of it. Next question. What's your favourite part about the sheep story?
Well, bizarrely and emphatically, it's lambing. And that's bizarre, because we used to, as a family, go on holiday every year somewhere nice and warm. I get a bit of culture in, but get a bit of heat. And now I spend my 2 weeks where I would have been on holiday, sitting in a stone building in February, with the walls which are two foot thick, so freezing cold, watching sheep for as many out of the 24 hours a day as I can, and watching them lamb. And that is, you know, what I enjoy doing, and that is what means that we don't get a holiday. But that really was the most exciting time and the most interesting time for me. It's a bit of a roller coaster, because you 1 minute and it's happened where you get a lamb born and it's born dead essentially, and you manage to bring it back to life, and that's fantastic. But then of course, you know, we haven't had a year where we haven't lost at least a couple of lambs during lambing time. So it's that trying to, you know, keeping them alive, getting, you know, and of course you lose them, but then of course you're quite tired and it's cold, so yeah. It's quite an emotional time, but it's quite a rewarding time as well. Mm-hmm. But with Vimto and other things as well, I quite like seeing the wool used. Mm-hmm. That's quite nice, you know, and it's been, you know, so it's nice seeing it, you know, just turn from a fleece into wool, into felt, and the various things that the guys in Vimto have done. So that's been a nice attachment as well, which didn't exist before.
Well, I'd say for those listeners that haven't understood this before, Al, obviously Sarah's husband, and he partakes in Vimto when he's here, and he's very artistic and he likes to be in amongst the sheep fleece, and it is weird because he smells it and he loves the smell of yarn. And it's not just him, because Caroline does this too, and I think it's very weird, because when I had a hangover the other day, I opened a bag of wool and I couldn't stand the smell.
You like to wash it to within an inch of its life.
I'm afraid I like the
it's no
oil.
Longer wool,
no, yeah. It just
natural
like,
acrylic.
Yeah, it's almost. Yeah, that's quite funny,
isn't it? And haven't your spinning people told you not to wash it too much?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. You know, Louise never does anything correct. But so Al is quite artistic, and therefore I think he probably make quite a lot of use out of it. So do you have any idea of what you want to do with your own sheep's wool?
Yeah, usually I'm really good at ideas. I think it's a male thing. I'm good at ideas, occasionally good at writing them down, but absolutely rubbish at doing them. So I like some things I particularly like the felt pictures that you've done. I think they're fantastic.
Thank you.
And the problem is, though, you make them look too easy. So, you know, needle felting. needle felting, and I think you've, well, I don't know what you call it, but essentially you've probably got a sewing machine and gone mental over it to make it, you know, to make it more attractive.
That's a good way of saying machine embroidery, yeah.
Oh, machine embroidery, I knew it, yeah, probably had a posh term. But so I really like that, actually, and I think that's achievable. I've got a peg loom, which I've only made a few things just using really rough, you know, just to, obviously as you're supposed to, take it from the fleece, but taking it from the fleece quite thickly. And I think that, again, with more confidence and more patience, I would, you know, get into a bit of spinning, which I've had a go at a little bit, of course, using Caroline's spare wheel. But your new one's looking very nice.
Yes, he likes my new wheel. Right, subliminal message for Sarah: buy Al a spinning wheel. I think he quite like an Ash for Joy or something similar. Subliminal message over.
Yeah, so that and using the peg loom to do a little bit more intricate weaving.
Yeah, forgot about the
spun,
peg loom.
Once I'd spun the wool a bit better.
Put it this way, Al likes his fleece. He likes his sheep, he likes the smell, he just likes them.
Mm.
So this brings us on to, why did you start the monochrome sheep at blogstot.com?
Yeah, well, a little while after we first moved into the croft, I started keeping a diary, and it was essentially a diary of all the stupid things that I'd done with animals. And it was quite, it was a bit of a relief, but I found it quite funny to read back on as well. But it was essentially, you know, all the things wrong. Probably some of them would they're funny, but of course they're not funny because they involve animals to a certain extent as well. So then though, I thought, well, it'd be nice to keep one for the sheep, and I have a bit of fanatic about colours, and the fact that black and white aren't colours, they're monochromes. So I have black and white sheep, so I've got monochrome sheep. Boring but important. So I started doing the same thing instead of having a diary, just using the blog, just to write down things as and when I've thought about them and like. But what I find a little bit though is that the calendar for sheep is, you know, it's exciting around lambing time, it's exciting if it can be exciting around tupping time. Yeah, well, that's probably wrong. Well, but, you know, shearing...
The top thinks it's good.
Well, that's true. He only got 2 weeks this year, so he's not too happy. But shearing time's interesting. Shows and sales are interesting. But it doesn't feel... You know, so I want to get it down, and but it's obviously sporadic because it's like, you know, okay, there's periods of time when you're doing stuff. So the next interesting time at the moment is, of course, when the scanner comes in. It's like, great, you know, this is how many are in lamb, and it's all going to be fantastic. But, of course, all we've had lately is snow and bad weather. And, you know, unfortunately, we've lost a few sheep because we haven't been able to keep them alive through the bad weather. So I don't tend to write about those sorts of things quite so much. Mm. So, but it's a nice place and it's a bit of a nice release. And I've met a few interesting people, other people with Jacobs and such like through it as well. So I'll keep doing it. It'll keep being sporadic. But as you'll see, there's some burnt wool where I over dried it. So hopefully there'll be a few of my projects on there as well.
Cool.
www.monochromesheep.blogspot.com.
And who's that?
That's my daddy.
Are you going to join Ravelry then?
Well, I am a member of Stitching Fingers.
Are you? Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah,
and I think
me.
We'll find technically I introduced you lot to Stitching Fingers.
You did.
So, you know, I'll...
Louise Hunt at Stitching Fingers and...
No idea. Probably monochrome sheep, I would have thought. Probably monochrome sheep.
I'll keep that
back. Yeah. Can't remember. Yeah.
Right. What are your future aspirations for the croft and your sheep flock?
Well, if it's losing less money, it's getting more money for the sheep. But in reality, although that's important, it's about showing sheep and growing, if that's the right word, or breeding is probably a better word. Decent pedigree Jacobs, you know, something that I would first of all be willing to take and show other people, and then hopefully would start to win prizes. So money's nice, but perfect pedigree Jacob, four-horn sheep, driven 700 miles to the show and sale would be where I would be looking. Instead of spending it, start getting some of it back.
Thank you very much, Al. Hopefully that will give all the listeners who don't know about sheep a bit more of an insight. And please visit his monochrome sheep blog spot to find out more and get a picture of the devil sheep that I call them. If you have any questions for Al, just message him or me and we'll get back to you with the answer. So lastly, could you please give all your sheep a bath before shearing next year so that I can use their fleece? Muchest thanks. So thank you, Al.
Well, it's my pleasure, and you'll have to come and wash it yourself, but you're more than welcome. And there's probably, at least for those of you that aren't too far away, there's probably plenty of fleece going. In fact, there's plenty from last year. So, yes.
And we live in Keith's Nace. Right, cheers. Thank you very much to Al and Oren for that interview. Okay, moving on. Warning, if you need a pee stop, then come back after, because it's time for the Daisy laugh. And she was tickled to get this. So to the craft fairy segment.
Craft fairy.
I had to let her out, sorry, because textile artists needed some Procyon dyes ordered for next dyeing day coming up. And the wee brat made it snow again. So I was thinking, no craft fairy until March when it's my birthday when I have to let her out for that. Albeit she has actually delivered lots and lots and lots of gifts to a lot of us, not just me. Now, I have had some brilliant, brilliant post. Post of much brilliantness. So I say a big thank you to Angora, who sent me up some green hand-dyed yarn, and it is going to the Wicked Witch of the West swap for someone to make a shawl for the old bag. Not Angora, the Wicked Witch. She had offered me this yarn after I was messaging her about the forest shawl mentioned in the last episode, and then she sent me up the exact same yarn. How kind is that? I did say that it was going to the swap because it was a bit of a dilemma, and she was okay with that, and she said yes, but she's also included a ball of DK weight for me in the same colourway. And I actually have it sitting on my craft desk, and it's the most beautiful colour, and it keeps changing my mind on what to do with it. Also, the craft fairy of much kindness has sent me not only a book, but a gang. I'm now in the Elizabeth Zimmerman gang. Now, I'll let you all in a little secret. Don't tell anyone. I'd never heard of her before last year. Yes, I know, you're all picking yourself going, what? But Lace Maven very kindly sent me a copy of Elizabeth Zimmerman's Knitter Almanac for the year, and some good shawl information as well. So not only have I had a letter from America, I've had a book as well, and now a gang in one envelope. Anyway, so thank you very much, and to Lace Maven, I've been sending thank yous in the forms of felted cards and handmade envelopes. And these subliminal messages seem to work quite well because our very own knitted kitten has taken ownership of a spinning wheel last week. Check out her project page because she's already hand-spun enough to make up a wrap already. Maybe I should let the craft fairy just go mad. Can we stand more snow? It's a dilemma there. Any more subliminal messages I need to give out to anyone? Just shout, because they seem to work. And sending well wishes. And sending thinking of you wishes to anyone in Queensland and Australia. Because I know that I've been listening to someone from Brisbane area, and we've been watching the news a lot about the floods, and I just hope that you're all okay. The cleanup has begun, so best wishes to them, and also to people in Brazil and to people in Arizona. The world's just a wee bit mad just now. More hugs to Knit a Journey, whose doggy Dash has gone to the great kennel in the sky to chase frisbees. Bless. He was an old gentleman and he had a good life with you, Knit a Journey. So sending some get well wishes to Pantafel's friend over in France. And Kale Pat, this cold is not good for you, is it? Hello section. Now, we've been joined by India, Pakistan and Latvia, added to the United Nations of Crafting. And I figured out that I can get a world map for all my listeners, which is very cool. Because you know that I love maps. I've copied this onto a Word document, but I can't figure out how to put it onto Flickr or Ravelry. So someone could tell me, and then you can see it too. It does say that I've only got 6 hits in Scotland. And I know that is not true. Because there's Mum, me, Sarah, Caroline, Rachel, Craig, and Spundun. And that's 7 Podbean, so na-na-na-na-na. Unless Sarah's lying. She could, you know, because she's so innocent looking. You would never know that she was lying or not. Nah, I'm only joking. It's Podbeam and ISP addresses. Because mine comes up like Glasgow, which is, say, actually a wee bit away. So I figure that it's a bit hit or miss as to whereabouts in the country that you are. Because one of the hits came from about 300 miles away off the Nigeria coastline. Yeah, think about it. I wonder if anyone is listening to me in a yacht. So hello to Irish Sheltie, Pantafels, Crochet Star, Volks Knitter 54, Sandy LV, Needs Yarn, Coggies M.I.L., Diana Bradburn, Finardar, and Tooth Fairy, who's another Scot, who have joined the group in Ravelry. I love the chat and your project pages, and I have messaged everybody, and it's going a bit mental in there. I've had so many messages, I couldn't tell you. I love them. Have you noticed the way on Ravelry that if you get a message on the top right, it dances when you log on? Well, in Scotland we have a phrase, are you dancing? Are you asking? Yes, I'm asking. Then I'm dancing. So I think this every time I get a message, and I'm always dancing. Also, thank you to the reviews on Podbean. Hello, Diana and Bio Betty, and someone that is not me gave me 5 stars. And for you new people, I always rate me as 5 stars. Evil laugh. Me. And iTunes, I had another review after saying I never check it. I thought better. And yes, there was another one. So thank you, Cyril. I checked it the other day. There was only one. It is really nice to get these positive reviews and messages. So thank you, one and all. And I finally have a friend on Stitching Fingers. So hello to Quilting Eagers. Hooray! Also, hello to the new tweeters. Tweeters, tweet me and I'll twit back. More likely twit than tweet. And I very much like Twitter information and it keeps me amused even if I don't reply to it all the time. Just, I like to know what you're up to. Moving on to news section.
The news.
I'm changing the name of the news section to what's a crack section because it means the same thing in Scottish. Sandy's in bed just now, so I'll get him to record this for next time. So, what's a crack section? Drive-by friending. A Kansas has been drive-by friended and not by someone in this group, so it's a proper one. Carry on drive-by friending to me because I'm a friendaholic. I've been trying to catch up on lots of podcasts of other people this time. I nearly peed myself when I heard Granny G gave me a glowing report from her November lemon vodka cake episode. She's lovely to do this, and thank you to my upside down friend. Can you remember the Beano comics when you were little of how people in Australia and New Zealand were upside down and you could get to them through digging a hole in the ground if you dug deep enough? Well, I believed that. Yes, I know. It was pink and fluffy and Louise La La Land, come on. And sometimes, well, I like to think that it's still true. Anyway, she's a joy to listen to and thank you for that. So get on with the next stool and stop skiving now. That was to chick Granny G. I was up to mischief. I have a photo on the Flickr, especially for DCW. I'll mark it for DCW so you know. And then you can go to her project page and see if you can match up my picture to her project. And I'll give you a clue, the second word is James. I should also have a few new photos up on the Flickr pages and you can access them from either the Podbean page or from the About Me page on Ravelry and there's a link to Flickr on there. I've been fiddling with the Podbean website again and I think I've made it worse for Internet Explorer browser people and I'm really sorry. I have tried to sort it out but I don't know why you can't see episode 16 and previous because it's not clear to me I did what the help thing said. So please either try the RSS feed button or catch me through your homepage podcatcher thing or try and iTunes me. And if you still can't get me, I don't know what to say. Okay, are you ready? Get your tartan out because it's time for the first Caithness Craft Collective's Burns Night Supper. Hoots moan, help my bob. Apart from Hogmanay, you didn't get much more Scottish than this. Right, the Scottish segment.
Scottish segment.
And yes, the Normans are next episode, honest, promise. But there was actually a very interesting article in this January's issue of the BBC History magazine about Vikings and Normans. Mostly aimed at England, but it's worth a listen to on the podcast and the actual magazine, which you can either get in the newsagent, which I saw for the first time ever this week, and you can get it digitally. There's an article in there about Robert Burns as well. So as a result, I think they listened to me, because I'd talked about this before theirs was published or mentioned that they were going to do it. So, I promised you Robbie Burns, and on the 25th of January, Scotland celebrates its National Bard's Birthday by doing what we do best, party. You get an impression here. Nothing to do with me. The Scottish poet Robert Burns was born on the January the 25th in 1759 in Alloway, Ayrshire, at what is now called Burns Cottage. The day of his birth is celebrated today throughout the world as Burns Night, with Burns suppers, poems and songs. So then I went to some of that was stolen from a website. So Burns Night menu. The centrepiece of any good Burns supper menu is the iconic haggis, or as the bard himself described it as, the great chieftain of the pudding race. Now Scottish people customarily go and shoot these on the hills previous to Burns Night, or on the same day if they're dead organised. Haggis have two legs shorter than the other, so they can run away fast from you on a hill. But what you have to do is have two of yous, and one sneaks up on the other one, and the other one gives it a fright, and the haggis turns round and it falls over, and they're easy to catch. But you can buy this from your local butcher, deli, supermarket, or nearest Scottish store if you live overseas. I get mine from Castleton Butcher. and the va. It's in my freezer just now. Traditional accompaniments to the haggis are neeps and tatties, or as they are more commonly known, turnip and potatoes. Now, actually, I know them, well, they're normally served mashed, but in Caithness we call them clapshot, more commonly known. Meh. There's actually a very interesting thread going on in Ravelry, started by Acanthus asking about neeps and tatties and what different vegetables that people around the world eat, and I was really surprised as to what people around the world eat. I just thought everybody knew what a neep and... Well, no, I thought everybody knew what a turnip was. But no, yous dinna. The haggis is already cooked and it just needs some careful reheating until it's piping hot. You can do this in the oven or in the pan. For the less domesticated out there, you can even do it in the microwave. Less domesticated. It's the best way to do it because the blooming thing always explodes all over the oven and it takes forever. Definitely. Open up the haggis from its skin, take off the metal bits and zap it in the Michael oven. Because my grandma's called the Michael oven the microwave. We do black pudding in the microwave as well, and it's fine. Obviously, don't overdo it. A tasty alternative for non-meat eaters is a vegetarian haggis. Actually, sorry, I shouldn't be so patronising. I know some of you are vegetarian, but you are missing out on the wee timorous tasty beastie. Now, for a starter, you may consider a homemade scotch broth or a cockaliki soup. Now, I'll go for cockaliki soup because I like barley, which is in the broth. Finally, and to round off your Burns supper menu, pudding might consist of a traditional clouty dumpling or a classic cranachan. Go clouty, go clouty. Nobody ever gets the cranachan right. The raspberries are normally frozen, so go clouty. Mm. And what to drink? So what to drink, that's what it said. Hello, this is a Scottish affair, whiskey. Say no more, full stop. Even if you don't like it, it's customary to get your dram, toast yon beastie and then hand it to your better half so they can have two drams whilst you are the driver and have your lemonade or your iron brew. Some actually pour the whiskey over the haggis. I'm not so sure on this as I generally like mine with tomato sauce and a lashing of Worcester sauce. But I suppose at a push you could have a Scottish real ale or, if you're a big girl's blouse, iron brew, which is Scotland's other national drink, being an orange version of Coca-Cola. Right, well that's the scran organised. First we need to go into the hall and make happy. Hello everybody, nice to see you again, how you doing? And there's probably a bit of chuchter music in the background, ding ling ding ling ding, foot's tapping. We'll find our seats, but as we don't yet sit, and the head table come in, and then the main event. The master of ceremony addresses the hall, and the Selkirk Greeks, which is, pay attention and bow your heads please people, show some respect. Selkirk Grace. Some hae meat and canna eat, and some would eat that want it, but we hae meat and we can eat, and so the Lord be thankit. We take our seats, all spruced up, we're in tartan ahoy. You scrub up very well, Tooth Fairy. And a door at the hall is swung open, and the bagpipes start up their skirling wail, and a lone piper plays their hearts out, coming through the throng of people. You can pretend it's Prairie Piper. Behind them, dressed to the nines in tartan and tweed, carrying a massive big plate, is the haggis bearer, and on the plate, which is normally a silver platter or as close as they could get or steal, is the wee sleekit beastie himself, the haggis. No, not the actor Paul Haggis, but an actual dead one which been shot in the hills at D. Haggis. So it gets piped up to the main table, and then the master of ceremonies, or someone with a bit of flair, will address the haggis in a Scots accent rather than my Caithness one, so forgive me for getting a bit of pronunciation slightly wrong. Fair fa' your honest sonsy face, great chieftain o' Puddin' Rees, aboon them a yet tak your place, panch tripe worth them. Weel are ye worthy a grace, as lang as my arm. The groaning trencher there ye fill, your hurdies like a distant hill, your pin was to help mend a mill in a time o' need. Well, throw your pores the dews distill like amber bead. His knife see rustic labour dight, and cut ye up wi' ready slight, trenching your gushing entrails bright like any ditch, and then, oh, what glorious sight, worm reeking rich. Then horn for horn they stretch and strive, they'll take the hindmost on they drive, till other wheels swalled kites be live, are bent like drums. Then ill good men mayst like to rive, bethan kit hums. Oh, there our his French ragout, or ole that wad sta stoot sue, or fricassee wad make her spew, wave perfect scorner, looks doon wi' sneering scurful view on sic a dinner. Poor devil, see him o'er his trash, his freckles wi' withered rash, his spindle shank, a good whip lash, his niv a knit. Throw bloody flood o'er field to dash, oh, how unfit! But mark the rustic haggis fade, the trembling earth resounds his trade. Clap in his waily knee a blade, he'll make it whistle, and legs and arms and hands will snade like taps o' trissle. Ye powers wha make mankind your care, and dish them out o' bill o' fare, auld Scotland wants nae skinking ware that jobs o' luggies. But ye get your grateful prayer, gear a haggis. Now, at the trench in your gushing entrails bright, line the toaster with a big silver claymore, or maybe a knife, probably a knife. Chop down and the haggis delights entrails rush all over the plate. Oh, yummy. The smell has started to waft over the crowd by now, but you'll have to wait a bit, because at the end you toast the haggis with your dram. The piper and the master get one too, of course. And then we have the meal of starter, main and pudding. So, we're all pleasantly stuffed and the whisky of the crack is flowing. The speeches will start in earnest. Oh, we've only just started this now, so pace yourself, man. We've plenty of them, with the obligatory speeches being an appreciation of the immortal memory of Rabbi Burns and to the lassies, and then a reply from the lassies, which is mostly made up for that night. And there might be a tam o'shanter, and there will probably be some singing of the Star of Rabbi Burn with a fiddler or even a band if you're going to be posh. We're obviously posh, so we've got a band and a bagpipe. Now, by this point, there's been a lot of whisky drunk, soaked up by the haggis neeps and tatties, and a right good crack going on. So at the end of the evening, a vote of thanks to the master of ceremony, the organisers, the caterers, the haggis shooter, the bagpiper, the musicians, and of course the guests. It's like a wedding, every excuse under the sun to toast and to thanks and to drink. And now please join me with the closing song of one you all know and love, Auld Lang Syne. This night is good in Scotland to brighten up winter after Christmas has died down. I likened Christmas and New Year to a lovely hot bath yesterday. You look forward to it, you enjoy the occasion, but as soon as it's over and cooled down, it's best straight down the plug hole, leaving you with a mess to tidy up. In Shetland they have Up Hail Ya, which is the fire festival in January, and all of Scotland will celebrate Burns Night, and beyond. It's a chance to get together with friends and family and acquaintances through the winter, and you don't see much of anyone. And also, I suppose, to mark the Robert Burns, the poet of Scotland. So if you want to know more about him, please visit www.robertburns.org. But to be perfectly honest, I was never much into him. I like my haggis with tomato sauce, and I'm no really not one for whisky. My friend David and I used to have, instead of Burns Night, J.K. Rowling Day, and talk about Harry Potter a lot. But she's not on the Scottish £5 note yet, is she? Both important parts of Scotland's literary history, even if J.K. isn't actually Scottish, and both are to be celebrated to the max, for whatever means you like. Now, thank you for coming to the first Burns Night supper. Please drink responsibly and have nominated drivers home, especially you, Craig. We saw you wearing into that bottle of Highland Park. Careful now. Oh, and myself. Yes, it is the Me Show. Well, I didn't want this episode to be too long with the interview and then the Burns Night poetry, so I'll just do a quick roundup with me this time. I've been to Spinning Guild, where I was helped with my wheel. Thank you, Anne. And I am now full of joy, as it worked wonderfully, and I was so happy spinning up round Jacob Fleece. Textile artist was lovely, because Ella was back from her holidays in Australia to see her son and family, and has lots of interesting stories of Down Under and photos of a quilt show, which were wonderful. I'd taken in my sewing machine and I was machine embroidering the Nurture from Nature peapod quilt, which I started in September with Evelyn Ramsey. See, I am finishing things. I figured it's what I wanted to do the most that day, and it was a perfect time to do it, so I did. And I've been back to it a few nights since, and I'm now on the border of it. Pretty cool. Vimto was at my house this week with Sarah, Caroline and Rachel, who were knitting, and I was very lucky, thank you. Caroline took up her drum carder, and I rattled through 4 massive big lumps of Jacob Fleece ready for spinning. 2 in white, 2 in brown. Granny G, some is for you. Sarah's baby is due the end of February, and we're all talking about baby knitted clothes for her. I can't tell you what I am doing for her because she's listening. So don't worry, when she has the baby, you will find out then. Oh, and remember the snow dyeing of the fabric from episode 20, I think it was? Well, the protein dyes arrive for textile artists, and it seemed a shame not to try it. The best thing about snow is snow dyeing. was actually, it was really good fun. It was collecting the snow in a plastic crate with a toy scoop, trying to keep it clean and get no stones or grass in it. And then the dog came bounding over with his frisbee and plonked it down right on top of me, covering me in snow. And I thought, don't take or eat yellow snow. Oh, the oldies are the best. Not. However, it was good fun doing it. The results were a bit peely-wally for me, which is pastel or pale to you. Quite delicate, but I wanted a bit more depth to most of them, so I over-dyed some of them the next night, and I have photos of them. But it leads me to a competition, and this is for those still listening. Never mind the ones who've drifted off. Coggy, yes, I'm talking about you. Actually, I do that all the time. I listen more intently to other people's podcasts and I go off to Louise La La Land for a bit, or hubby speaks to me. But don't worry, Coggy, you'll wake up thinking that you're eating yellow snow and have a funny taste in your mouth. Anyway, so one of those pieces of material, I've dyed it orange and blue to represent Mr. Tickle. And the competition is this. Tell me what you would do with your enormously long arms if you were Mr. Tickle, other than tickle people. So you can private message me on Ravelry, send me an email to katenscraftcraftcollective@googlemail.com or Stitching Fingers. And I'll leave this open until the 31st of January. The best answer gets this piece of cotton material, which is about 1 meter by 50 centimeters, and some handmade envelopes. So that's me. Righty, thank you for listening, and if you want to contact me, please do so on Ravelry as Louise J. Hunt, or Stitching Fingers as Louise Hunt, or katenscraftcollective@gmail.com, or leave a comment on the Podbean webpage. You can get me on iTunes or www.katenscraftcollective.podbean, and on Twitter as katenscraft. All the links are on the show notes, so please go there to click on anything you want more information on. This week, the music is Caledonia by Caledon X from www.musicalley.com, playing us out. Cheers for listening and keep on crafting.
And I think about you all the time.
Yes, I think about you.
Caledonia, you're calling me. Now I'm going.